This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Rarely these days do members of Congress seem to agree on anything, but last week the House of Representatives voted unanimously to approve legislation on prostitution and sex trafficking. In a twist on Nathaniel Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter, this new law would criminalize the men in the sex business, customers or johns, and pimps. Up till now, women paid nearly all of the legal price for prostitution, along with sexually transmitted infections, physical and emotional abuse that also come along with the job. This new federal effort comes as many cities and states try different tactics. Chicago's police department is among those that post the names and pictures and addresses of johns on a special website. In Oakland, California, those pictures are up on billboards. In San Francisco and in other cities, convicted johns are sentenced to attend special schools run by former prostitutes. It's not yet clear whether this new emphasis on the demand side of the sex industry will result in real change. Later in the program, Ahmad's War, Ahmad's Peace. Michael Goldfarb joins us to talk about democracy and Iraq. But first, prostitution, pimps, and johns. If you've seen any of these anti-prostitution programs in action, if you've been through some of them yourself, join us. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. And our first guest is Norma Hotalling. She's the founder of Standing Against Global Exploitation Project. That's called SAGE for short. That after surviving a childhood where she was sexually exploited and later years as a sex worker. She joins us from the studios of KQED, our member station in San Francisco. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Let me ask you, this new federal bill on sex trafficking, I know you worked on it with Congresswoman Deborah Price of Ohio, but that bill, some of these other efforts that we've been seeing around the country, seem to represent at least the leading edge of a change of thinking about the nature of this transaction, this which is a crime on the books almost everywhere except some parts of Nevada. Women are no longer being seen as the principal criminals, but as victims.
Right. And that has been a strategy that we've had in San Francisco for over 10 years. In fact, the leading arrests in San Francisco are not of women. It's actually of men. And the program that they do attend is a pre-charge program. So we don't clog up the court mm-hmm. system. The men pay an administrative fee, which is funneled back into services, because there has not been any political will or an understanding of the issue up until now. So we have charged the men and charged them both, for a crime, but instead sent them to an educational program, but charged them money and funneled that money back into services. So it's a restorative justice program, and that program has won a number of major awards because of its innovation.
And does it work? I mean, you set it up 10 years ago.
We were apprehensive at best. There was no research on men, even though there are thousands and thousands of articles on women, on whether or not they are vectors of diseases, not really on any of the psychosocial issues, need for rehabilitation, legal issues. So we set the program up on a wish and a prayer, and hoping that had a goal of if we helped one man out of a program, we would be satisfied, and came out of our first program amazed and surprised that there was a response that was positive from most of the men that go through the program. The men said that they wanted to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. They said it was one of the best programs that they've ever attended. It has a 98% success rate, meaning that after a year of tracking the men that go through the program, 98% of them have not been rearrested. And I've had over 7,000 men go through the program in San Francisco. It's been replicated all throughout the United States, through Canada. Now, Korea has already implemented the program, and it continues to have amazing results with the men that attend the program. Mm-hmm. I stand there every afternoon after the program, shaking their hands, getting hugs, having them cry, thanking me, say that they were about to recruit their sons into prostitution. And the list of of solutions and successes goes on and on.
I wonder, how did that experience of obviously you worked with the women for many years, but working with the men in this case, how did that inform your participation in drafting this bill or helping Congresswoman Price draft this bill?
Well, what we started out with in San Francisco is what communities are struggling with throughout the United States, and that is when there's a problem of prostitution in neighborhoods, on the net, in massage parlors, everybody gathers forces, and that includes neighborhood groups, business groups, criminal justice systems to go after the women and never see the issue of victimization, of economic deprivation, of gender inequality, of extreme vulnerability. And so we started the program so that at least people would see that there are other parties involved. And that has continued through the legislation, the Trafficking in Persons Act of 2000.
Go ahead, turn it off. Somebody's calling to tell you they're hearing you on the radio. So just go ahead and turn the phone off.
Okay.
There you go.
And so there's been the Trafficking in Persons Act, which was first authorized in 2000. It's been reauthorized throughout the years, and this year has included many provisions for domestic trafficking. What we have seen is that international trafficking victims who are brought here from other countries coming from very vulnerable situations are afforded rights and privileges that our own citizens have not received. Mm-hmm. And that includes children. And that includes women who come from very, very vulnerable situations who are recruited and trafficked throughout the United States. And we have been publicizing this issue since 1990. I got out of jail when I was I was 38 years old, but that was 1989. And I have been advocating on behalf of women and children and the need for services and creating services since that time. So this is the first time that through legislation, the provision for services of Americans who are exploited on American soil is part of our legislative scene now.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today with Norma Hotalling, founder of the SAGE Project. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's hear from Pasha. Pasha calling us from Boulder, Colorado.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Okay. I would just like to say that it would be great for the clients as well as the pimps and the madams to be prosecuted as equals with the women. I myself am a former prostitute and a former madam. I got a lot of national exposure here recently for the CU football scandal and have been made a social pariah thereof. And it's just very frustrating when I see women in this business really being shunned by society by the same guys who are actually using the services
mm-hmm.
behind closed doors. So it's very frustrating, and a lot of these clients, granted, are not bad guys. Some of them are sex addicts. Some of them are very nice guys. They have a physical handicap or something like that that makes them feel like they can't go out and meet women under normal circumstances. But be that as it may, there are quite a few of the gentlemen that have clear criminal intent to abuse or victimize these women. But society sees the women instead as not as victims, but as home wreckers and it's very easy to lay blame at the foot of a prostitute versus the clients who are using her services.
Norma Hotalling, let me ask you, of course, for a response to that, but also to turn it a bit and talk more about the pimps as well. I mean, these are the people, the oppressors, exploiters, if you will, and people making the money out of this.
I myself became a madam, and my justification for that was because I was justified it by saying that I'm not taking as much money as the other services. I'm not going to ask for freebies from the girls like these pimps do. I'm not going to make them, force them to stay in the business. And oftentimes we'd set up plans to segue these ladies out of the business and into more legitimate jobs. However, it was just an excuse. It was just my way of rationalizing taking these ladies' money, because quite frankly, that's what I did.
Norma Hotellinger, do other people rationalize in that way?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's hear from Norma, Pasha, please.
Pasha couldn't say it better. I think that, having a woman who has been part of being a madam and, as we would say, a pimp, talk about her experience and talk about the realities of it is very, very chilling. And what we see from the men all the time, they like to point the fingers outward, the problem is out there. And the men do say, the problem is the women. They're just dirty whores. They're just angry women. Unless they're smiling, unless they're compliant, the men point the fingers. I don't have customers coming to court for women who have been arrested over 100 times. But when they get arrested one time, believe me, they are crying on the DA's doorstep. The other issue is it's very important not to always point the finger outward. We have to point it back at ourselves. The industry of pimping and pandering, the huge multinational crime industry of trafficking in persons, which is a $30 billion industry, has been created by us. And it's been created because we arrest women, we arrest children for their own victimization. We're saying to children that they have consented to their own sexual abuse, to their own rape, and by consenting to that, they have committed a crime, and they should be arrested and put in jail and rehabilitation programs. And the amount of money...
We're just running out of time for them. Sorry, we're going to have to get back to this after the break. Pasha, thank you very much for the call. We will be back after the break. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Prostitution is a crime in almost all of the United States. What's not so clear is who should be prosecuted. A bill passed by the House last week puts more focus on the pimps, brothel owners, and John, the customers. That's what we're talking about this hour. We want to hear from you, particularly if you're in law enforcement or have been involved in efforts to curb prostitution. Does it make good law enforcement sense to target the clients and the pimps? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And our guest is Norma Hotelling, founder of the SAGE Project, Standing Against Global Exploitation Project, and she's with us from KQED in San Francisco. One of the main factors fueling prostitution, of course, is poverty. Rather than reducing demand for sex workers, some organizations argue that helping women out of prostitution and into the legal economy is the best way to curb supply. Juhu Tukral is the director of the Sex Workers Project at the Urban Justice Center in New York, and she joins us from her home in Brooklyn. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
This new legislation coming out of Congress addresses sex trafficking. Can you briefly explain how domestic sex trafficking and prostitution differ?
The idea of trafficking into prostitution is where people are coerced or deceived or somehow brought into prostitution, either against their will or into conditions where the conditions are much worse than they would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
For example, somebody actually might agree to be in prostitution, but then have all of their money withheld or be beaten or told, you can't leave now because I'm going to hold on to your children, that type of thing.
But the trafficking is the classic women lured by false promises of employment from Romania or Russia or wherever.
And trafficking can also happen, domestically, not even somebody being brought in from outside the country. They could, really the idea of trafficking is just this idea of being held in a coercive situation of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but not all people involved in prostitution have been trafficked into prostitution. I mean, there's a distinction there.
And it's interesting that what we're seeing in some of this new legislation and some of these new activities around the country is increasing recognition of that, that maybe the best comparison to that situation is slavery.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's been more growing understanding of this idea of trafficking in persons as an international problem, where people are trafficked into, for example, the United States for any number of industries, whether it's prostitution, agricultural work, restaurant work. Here in New York City, most service providers will say that the largest percentage or largest group of workers that they work with are domestic workers, people brought in to work in people's homes. As you can imagine, they're completely vulnerable, alone mm-hmm. in the house, and you know, not knowing the language and that kind of thing. So it's really something that stems out of poverty and people being in a position where they need to move in order to work and make enough money to support families back home.
And I wonder what you think about this new legislation, which is would divert it's expected to pass in the United States Senate. It has not yet,
yeah.
But this would send millions of dollars compared to other things, not many millions, but millions of dollars to help on these John schools and to help prosecute pimps. Do you think that's the right direction to go?
You know, it's not really the most effective use of government resources. In terms of, you know, people being involved in prostitution, I mean, we provide legal services and legal advocacy for people involved in really any aspect of the sex industry. And I also think it's important to point out that it's not just women. I mean, there are so many men and, you know, LGBT youth. I mean, there are so many transgender adults and youth who are involved in prostitution who have no access to services. I mean, there's almost nothing for them, and you know, they experience a great deal of stigma. But when you look at people who are involved in prostitution, I mean, there's an economic drive. People need the money. They may be in a vulnerable situation, or they may be saying, you know what, I'm looking at all of these things that I could go do to make money. The one where I can really earn enough to support myself is involved in sex work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really advocate that there should be more money going into providing stable housing for people, really substantive services for people who need help so that if they want to leave, they can leave. If they're staying in prostitution, you can't make somebody leave if they're not ready to at least make sure that they're safe, that mm-hmm. they know how to protect themselves. And, you know, one thing that it's sort of ironic is that there's really this focus on arresting Johns right now, but in most jurisdictions, when a prostitute experiences some level of violence from a customer, there are many times when the police do not take it seriously. Most prostitutes won't even come forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even that basic level of sort of being treated like a human being when you're a victim of violence, that's really not been recognized at the law enforcement level. And, you know, so it's good that law enforcement wants to assist, but really arresting customers is not going to be effective, because people who want to find a prostitute and go to a prostitute will find other ways to do it.
And Norma Hotalling, I know you wouldn't oppose more money for a lot of these programs, but given limited resources, is this the right way to direct it?
We have been providing services that were just described for over 10 years without any legislative backing. So we have been addressing the needs of trauma, mental health, substance abuse, housing, and vocational training for over 10 years. And we've done it from a base of survivors providing the work. Most of the people that are employed at SAGE have histories of being involved in the sex industry. So we believe that, one, agreed that if a person doesn't want to leave, isn't ready to leave, that they cannot be forced to leave, and they deserve to have services in order to stay safe. And that is our harm reduction model. We work with transgender youth, mm-hmm. with men, and we do believe that men through the John schools deserve to have education and information in order to make an informed decision. And there's a huge sex industry out there with targeted advertisement focused on the men. And the men in our program, and like I've said, I've had over 7,000 men go through the program in San Francisco, every single program, they stop the program and they say, why wasn't this information given to us sooner? Why isn't it in schools? Why aren't our boys being educated? Why aren't girls getting the education that they need in order not to be recruited by pimps? So there's a lot of education that needs to happen and continue to happen.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to bring another caller in on the conversation, and this is Howard. Howard's calling us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hey.
Yes, Howard, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm a counselor now. I have a support group for men involved in this, but at one time I was heavily involved in prostitution myself, and back when I lived up in the Northeast in Boston. They had a program somewhat similar to this going in Boston in the early 80s in that they would put your name in the paper and call your family.
Mm-hmm.
And that never stopped me. Now, I'm impressed with that 7,000 number that I just heard. That's pretty impressive if you've dealt with that many men. But the men that come to me now for counseling, and they've been caught. Yeah, that will stop you if your wife finds out or something. But up until that point, the threat of that happening never stopped me. And I think that most people who go to prostitutes on a regular basis are sex addicts, and that they're not going to stop no matter what threat is there.
I wonder if we get a response to that from Juhu Thukral.
Yeah, I'm really glad that this came up, because one thing that I think is just incredibly cruel is this idea, though, of posting pictures on the Internet and on, in other public forums, because often these men are married, they have children, and I think that the impact on a wife and children of having, the husband or father's picture posted somewhere, it's so cruel. I think really, if you want to get back to, all of the kinds of things that people do need assistance with, again, funneling all of this money into these kinds of programs, it's not effective. In the end, we need more programs where people do have options for, counseling, job training, all of those kinds of things. I get calls from people all the time who say, I need help, I do want to be able to leave. And my program, we can provide legal advocacy, but there are very few programs. There are some, and they're very good, but they're not enough. It's, and really, if you're a prostitute and you're not also a victim of domestic violence, you're not also trafficked, you're not also maybe having a psychiatric disability, and you don't fit into one of these other categories,
mm-hmm.
there are almost no services. So there's no safe shelter. There's no place where they can go and have sort of a case manager who's going to help them manage a number of things while they try to take classes and, maybe learn a new skill or learn how to transfer, whatever skills they have into the mainstream economy. But, in a report that we released this year earlier in the spring, behind closed doors, 67% of the people that we interviewed said that they weren't able to make a living wage in other jobs that they'd had. A large percentage of them also had mainstream jobs, but then worked in sex work on the side in order to make enough money to get by.
Yeah. Howard, thanks.
Can I make one more quick comment?
If you make it quick, Howard.
All right. The thing I think is happening here is people are looking at this from the point of a normal person who doesn't do prostitutes, saying, well, of course, if we put their picture in the paper and tell their families, it's going to stop them. But unfortunately, as a sex addict, I know we don't think normally. That isn't how we think. And that's what the problem with this program is it wouldn't have stopped me, is all I'm saying. It didn't stop me, and I almost got in that thing.
Yeah.
And I think 90% of the people out there, it wouldn't stop. I'm not saying we oughtn't do something, but the people who come to my group, they've already been caught. Very few come to my group saying, gee, I'm afraid of being caught.
Right. Howard, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
All right.
And Juhu Thukral, thank you very much for your time today.
Sure, thank you.
Juhu Thukral is director of the Sex Workers Project at the Urban Justice Center in New York City and joined us today from her home in Brooklyn. And Norma Hotelling, I wanted to get your response to that exchange.
I believe that there's a little misconception. I fight tooth and nail not to have names posted on the internet, on John sites, on the television, on billboards. I really believe in the educational model, and I've seen it work. And it works after the men get caught. When they ask, why weren't we given this information sooner, I say, well, what if we put up a shingle and say, all Johns come here, and they all just bust out laughing, because they know that they would not come to a program until they got caught. So the gentleman, I think we're talking about the same thing, getting caught and having a program, but not calling wives the first time, not destroying the very fragile personal relationships that the men have going. I think it's important to build on those relationships, and you do that with a good public health education program, and that's what we provide.
Norma Hotelling wanted to thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you for this program.
Norma Hotelling, founder of Sage Project Incorporated. She joined us from the studios of our member station in San Francisco, KQED. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And what do men think about these new strategies to reduce prostitution? Our next guest has studied John schools in San Francisco and in Portland, Oregon, and surveyed more than 2,000 Johns or customers. Martin Monto is chairman of the Social and Behavioral Sciences Department at the University of Portland in Portland, Oregon, and he joins us from the studio at Palatine Recordings in Portland. It's very nice of you to join us today and talk of the Nation.
Nice to be here, Neil. Thanks.
Now, I understand you've researched these John schools. What did you find out about the men who get caught and have to attend them?
Well, for the most part, the men who are caught in the sting operations are people that haven't been involved extensively in prostitution before. And that's actually one of the reasons why programs like the one Norma describes have some genuine potential. These are men that are often early in their career before they've established a pattern of sexual behavior.
So this might disrupt a developing pattern.
That's right. About 40% of the men had never claimed that they had either never been with a prostitute or had only been once within the past year. There were men that had been there more extensively, but they're less likely to get caught in those sting operations.
And does 8 hours of instruction and education really change them around?
Well, it wouldn't if it was an established pattern of sexual behavior, but it's a fairly powerful message. I've observed the workshops before. And the men are confronted with the possibility of further legal consequences, the risk of sexually transmitted diseases, and they're confronted by women that are survivors of prostitution that tell their stories. And the stories really kind of debunk some of the myths associated with prostitution, and they make it far less appealing than it might otherwise be. For men to be interested in prostitution, most men do engage in sort of a fantasy that it's a mutually pleasurable exchange, and in fact, when you hear from the survivors, you find out that this isn't really the case. So,
men really think it is pretty woman.
I think it's not quite pretty woman, especially if they've had experience with it. But it's something they're able to, you know, sustain an idea that it's mutually desirable and consensual and things like that. And in fact, as you've just heard for many of the women, especially street prostitutes, consent is certainly mediated by a lot of, you know, of very severe issues. I mean, they're, you know, risk of violence from a partner or pimp, threat of violence from a partner or pimp, drug abuse or drug addiction, and many of them enter as minors as well. So learning about that, I think, it's actually a very optimistic idea that these men, through an act of conscience and you know, hearing about the information, would actually make a decision to change. But I think that it's a reasonable expectation.
And how do you actually measure success? I mean, Norma Hotelling was talking about recidivism rates of just 2%. That's within 1 year, only 2% of those attending one of her classes got arrested again in the state of California.
It's very difficult to measure the success of a program like this. Currently, the National Institute of Justice is doing an evaluation of the San Francisco program, and they're going to use a variety of measures, is my understanding. But the challenge of using recidivism is that you'd have to have a good comparison group who didn't go through the program. Assuming a person gets caught once, it's fairly easy not to get caught again. But if you have enough participants and you have a comparison group, you can measure success through recidivism. You can also measure success through the accounts that the men provide following the workshop, and the men are often very very positive about what they've learned and appreciate it, as Norma described earlier.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Martin Monto about the experiences of men at some of these John's classes. If you'd like to join us again, it's 800-989-8255. Email TOTN at NPR.org. We'll also be talking about the tragedy of one man's life in Iraq, a survivor under Saddam Hussein who died shortly after the liberation of Iraq. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're wrapping up our conversation on new efforts to address the demand side of the sex for hire industry. There are attempts in several cities to use humiliation. That's to post the names and addresses, even the pictures of Johns on websites, in Oakland, California, on billboards. Many cities, including San Francisco, have so-called John schools, where arrested customers of prostitutes have to go to classes 8 hours to listen to survivors of prostitution talk about the experience and maybe come away changed. Our guest is Martin Monto, sociology professor at the University of Portland in Portland, Oregon. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Sherry. Sherry calling us from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hi, I was calling to say, unfortunately, I don't think prostitution's going anywhere. And although the educational programs may help the Johns with their sex addiction, that I really think a better answer, especially for the sexual, the trafficking and the minors, is to have more safe, clean, legal places for people to go partake in prostitution. Not that anyone likes it, but I just think they're going to go around it and find other ways to get to it otherwise.
Sherry, do you speak from experience?
Yes. Oh, yes. I worked on the streets in South Florida.
Martin Monto, that's certainly something that a lot of people would propose. Making it more legal keeps it more clean.
Well, I think that's one of the kind of popular assumptions we have in the United States is that if we went to a legalized system of prostitution like we might find in the Netherlands, that that would ameliorate many of the problems associated with prostitution. We have to recognize the fact that in the United States, there are a lot of social contexts that mean prostitution is very different than it would be in those countries. We have, in contrast to European countries that have legalized or decriminalized prostitution, we have a lot more teen runaways. We have the Netherlands has free drug treatment for everyone, has an elaborate social safety net, social welfare safety net for people, so they don't have the extreme poverty we have in the United States. So I don't think we can assume that a system of legalization would result in the kinds of prostitution you see in Europe. And I also would mention that, for example, in Amsterdam, many of the people that participate are still victims of violence over there. So the idea that legalization will resolve many of these problems is inaccurate, because prostitution is shaped by so many things besides the legal nature of whether it's legal or illegal and how we respond to it. There's so many other issues that are there.
Wondered if Sherry had a response to that.
I know nothing will ever completely take care of the problem. I just thought, especially it seems like in Kansas City, we put the people's names on television, and it didn't seem to be much deterrent, and I don't know why, but it always seemed like it was the middle-class white guys getting busted. And I do believe that those people, so the people that seem to be getting busted for this, the Johns, I believe if they had a legal, safe option, they would take it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one of the assumptions the caller's making is that prostitution is an inevitability. And prostitution does vary dramatically from culture to culture. It's not common in all places. It's not necessarily a normal part of masculine sexual behavior. That's an assumption we have in this country. But in fact, good research, the National Health and Social Life Survey and the General Social Survey also show that fewer than 1 out of every 5 men have ever participated, and fewer than 1% of American men have participated in prostitution in the previous year. So we shouldn't assume that this is normal masculine sexual behavior. The idea that it's always going to be around, I think that contributes to the problem to some degree. It's found in most cultures, but it isn't necessarily going to be around in the same levels we see all the time.
Sherry, thanks very much for the call, and good luck to you.
One quick comment, if I could, about what someone else said. I do believe if we had better medical and social programs in this country to treat all the children who are molested as children, because most women voluntarily working in the sex industry in this country were molested as children, that we might see a decrease.
Sherry, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I think the caller has a good point there as well. I would point out that the John's schools, things that it, programs that address the supply side, I mean the demand side of the equation, don't need to be exclusive to addressing the problems associated with the, you know, the challenges that prostitutes and are facing. Mm-hmm. In fact, the John School in San Francisco is essentially self-sustaining. It doesn't require additional funding. The men pay a fee for attending the class, and essentially it draws income a little bit, in fact. Mm-hmm. And that income goes, a third of that income does go to survivors programs.
And before we let you go, one final question, and that is about sort of the, even the language, the atmosphere around it. We began this program by talking about a different approach in a bill that was passed by the House of Representatives unanimously last week and looks like it's going to be passed by the Senate as well in terms of trafficking and prostitution. Are we seeing a change in the way people look at the problem and the way they think about it, address it, even the language that they use about it, or is this something that's just another speed bump in a long story?
I do think there's been a recognition over the last decade that we need to address the demand side of the supply-demand equation, that we do need to pay attention to the customers, and that, in fact, the customers, because they're not compelled to participate, might be a legitimate way to reduce prostitution in the United States.
Martin Monto, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Martin Monto, chairman of the Social and Behavioral Sciences Department at the University of Portland in Portland, Oregon, and he joined us from the studios of Palatine Recordings in Portland.